You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. We're glad you're here today. I'm Leanne Dolan in Pasadena, California. I'm a writer and producer. I'm here with my sister, Liz Dolan. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Leanne. I'm Liz Dolan in Santa Monica, California. I'm a marketer and a podcaster, and I'm here at home with my dog, Hooper. And how about you, Julie?
Hey, this is Julie Dolan. I'm in Dallas in my closet all by myself. I think my dog is up against the closet door wanting to get it and bust his way in.
Today's Satellite Sister is going to be a little bit different. We decided to take the entire hour and devote it to one topic, and that is death by suicide. I know. It's not going to be the tidbits and the tips to clip that we usually do or the Tuesday trends, but we thought this was important enough to talk about and we wanted to devote the whole hour to it. Our guest today is a friend of mine, Charlotte Maya. She has written a new memoir called Sushi Tuesdays, and the subtitle is A Memoir of Love, Loss, and Family Resilience. Charlotte lost her husband, Sam, 15 years ago to suicide. She was a mom living in La Cañada, California, a nice suburb. She had two little kids. She was a practicing lawyer at the time. And one day she came home and she discovered that her husband had died by suicide. And she had to completely recalibrate her entire life. Her memoir is so open and so honest. I was really, really blown away when I read it. I thought, now I finally have some answers. Because if you know people that have died by suicide, and you try to put yourself in their position, you almost can't do it. The people that are left behind, like, I can't imagine what it'd be like if my husband, or my son, or my daughter, or my sister died by suicide. Charlotte takes you into the seconds, minutes, hours, days, months, and years after that event. And, you know, all they went through for their family to end up on the other end, healthy and relatively happy now. So we're looking forward to welcoming Charlotte and to talking to her about her experiences. She also writes a lot about suicide now. She has a wonderful website and blog and newsletter. And so she's become an expert as such. And we're going to talk to her about that too. But Liz, we had some listeners who wanted to comment before the show about how suicide has affected them.
Right. Not surprisingly, Leanne, I mean, last week when you posted in the Satellite Sisters Facebook group that this would be the subject of this week's episode and we were spending the whole episode on it, we did get a lot of comments from members of the group about their own experiences with suicide. Kathy wrote, 13 years ago, I almost lost my husband. Frightening now what he went through, what I went through, and more. He is still here, though, and doing good. So that's great. Becky wrote, I'm looking forward to this. Thank you for doing this. I'm lucky to still have my son, but almost lost him once. Wow. He's doing well now, but it's always a fear.
I bet.
Terry wrote, there was a time I was on suicide watch with my son who was about 20 and was refusing help. It's such a hopeless feeling to watch loved ones and friends struggle. And sometimes there are no signs. I'm happy to say my son got help and is 37 and doing awesome. And then Amy, this is more recent, Amy wrote, thank you. This is such a hard topic to navigate and one that is often only spoken about in hushed tones. Exactly, Amy. We want to ask Charlotte about that. She said, our family lost our 27-year-old nephew late last year. It's so different than anything we've ever had to deal with. Yes, we're hoping Charlotte can give us some insight into that, Amy.
Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, Amy. All right, when we return, we're going to have Charlotte Maya with us. So please stay with us.
Liz, summer is coming up, and you know what that means? It means you're grilling. You're grilling and chilling with your butcher box. What do you got going on the grill this summer?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm going to be up in Bend for a part of the summer, yeah, I'm having my box sent there, Leanne.
That's great.
Go on vacation with your butcher box is what what I'm recommending. The other way, you're just going to buy meat and fish and stuff when you get there. Why do that? Anyway, I love their steaks. I love their scallops. The scallops are really good. And the chicken thighs, all good. I'm ready.
That's right. ButcherBox gives you peace of mind and easy to find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork that's raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. No antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. And you can customize that delivery plan, Liz, right? Because it can go wherever you want it to go, whenever you want it to go. If you want to delay it a week, you know, speed it up a week, you just go to your ButcherBox account and you can make that all happen.
It's so easy to manage online.
Yeah. And if you're like Liz, you can take your ButcherBox on vacation, which is... That's nice. That's nice. Nice to have something familiar there.
Yes.
So if you want to take your meat on vacation, sign up at butcherbox.com/sisters and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. So you can choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to choose your free for a year offer, plus get $20 off your first order. Thanks, ButcherBox. Liz and Leanne here, and we are so grateful to have Osea support Satellite Sisters. Why? Because it's just a great product. Holy cow, do we love Osea's skin and body care. And you know what? This Mother's Day, just look no further than Osea. Spoil the moms in your life with the little luxuries from Osea. The moms, the stepmoms, the bonus moms, the people who bring a touch of something special to your life, aunts, grandmothers, they would love a little Osea this Mother's Day. And you can get 10% off your first order by using our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And Liz, you know what every mother and mother figure needs?
What?
More moisture, Liz. They need more moisture in their skin.
No kidding. I mean, really, the creams, the lotions, the oils. I love it all. That duo they have going. Oh. Like, you can't miss with the duo of Osea.
Liz, the mega moisture duo. Yes. You can literally see your skin get firmer. And it just delivers this full body glow. Okay, you know we have raved about the Undaria Algae Body Oil. Mm-hmm. Well, pair that with the Undaria Collagen Body Oil. Youthful, yeah. Liz, your youthful yeah. glow is going to happen. And it's infused with Osea's signature Undaria seaweed. So it just smells so delicious, doesn't it?
I know you're talking about giving it as a gift. I also suggest just giving it to yourself because you're worth it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Okay, that moisture duo I mentioned too is a great value because you can save 16% plus the extra 10% with our code SADSISTERS. So this is it. This is a win-win-win Mother's Day gift. Spoil the moms in your life with clean vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. And you get free samples in every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Osea is spelled O-S-E-A. So head on over to OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea. Hey, it's Liz and Leanne here, and we want to thank PROS for supporting this episode of Satellite Sisters. Now, you know, Liz, I've been out and about with my new book, The Marriage Sabbatical. The book is getting rave reviews. I'm very happy. But you know what else is getting rave reviews? My hair, Liz. My hair from PROS is getting rave reviews.
Leanne, I am not surprised. You have been on that PROS hair regimen for quite a while. I mean, you have good hair anyway, but now you have great hair because you've really paid attention to it.
Well, Liz, PROS is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. And you know what? I love the regimen they have me on. Do I take the hair vitamins every day? Yes, I do. Do I use my shampoo and conditioner made especially for Leanne Dolan? Yes, I do. I sometimes use the leave-in conditioner when my hair's really dry? I do. And I even have a pre-scalp thing that they give me. Okay, PROS, you're the boss. I'll take it. You tell me what my hair needs. That sounds good. And here's the thing. It's personalization, Liz. For millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely Leanne's. Okay? And I'm using it. Pros isn't just better for you. It's also better for the planet, Liz. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon neutral custom beauty brand. So Pros, we love you. I love the photos of my hair. Couldn't be happier.
Photos of your hair. There are people in the photos too. That's the thing about a book tour. Everybody has their picture taken with Leanne and then posts it. So the hair is important.
Couldn't be happier, Pros. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin. They're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And Pros is spelled P-R-O-S-E, pros.com/sisters. Thanks, Pros.
We're back. We're the Satellite Sisters, Leanne, Liz, and Julie here. We're so happy to welcome Charlotte Maya to Satellite Sisters. We've told you about her memoir, Sushi Tuesday. Thank you for being on the show, Charlotte.
Leanne, thanks so much for having me.
You know, we're going to talk about your specific experience, what you write so movingly about in Sushi Tuesday, but we're also going to open the conversation up at the end because you've done so much writing and talking about the subject of suicide. I don't want to say you're an expert in it, but how do you refer to yourself when you think about this?
I refer to myself as a widow. The lived experience is my expertise, and I just really care about talking about this subject. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in this country. It's second for the age group 25 to 34, which is horrifying.
It's horrifying. Wow, that is horrifying.
But we don't like to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing we know helps is talking about it.
So, okay.
That's
so we're
going to
talk about it today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's start by talking about your husband, Sam, who died 15 years ago by suicide. Charlotte, what was your family like before his death? How would you have described your family life?
I would have described our family life as pretty unremarkable. We had two kids. They were 6 and 8. We had a white picket fence. We had a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. I mean, it was a pretty domestic, happy life. We had a nice marriage. And, you know, we didn't fight about things. I was totally surprised by his suicide. There were things I could look back at in retrospect and recognize in a different way, which is also why I think we need a fluency around the subject of suicide, sort of in the same way that we know about physical health. When we talk about physical health, if we can talk about mental health and in such a natural way, I think I might have recognized some of the signs sooner.
Mm-hmm. What do you think Sam was going through at the time? What was he going through? He had some physical issues. What else was he going through?
Sam had had back pain from the time he was 13. So in some ways, it had always been a part of our life together. I had never known him without back pain. And at 41, I don't think he could even remember living without back pain anymore. He had job stress. But, you know, if you have a job, you have job stress.
Right.
If you don't have a job, then you really have job stress. Mm-hmm. He had lost a couple pounds over the summer, but not, you know, like 5 or 10 pounds, not like crazy. And who doesn't want to lose 5 or 10 pounds? I don't know anyone in their 40s who doesn't want to lose 5 or 10 pounds.
Right.
And so these were all things I could look back later and go, and then another thing, the night before he died, he had his will and trust, our will and trust out on the counter. And that can be a sign, but I was a trust and estates attorney. So I read things routinely and it didn't faze me at all. And in fact, our will and trust at the time said everything goes to Danny, our firstborn, and any other children we have in equal shares. And I thought it would be nice to revise it to put Jason in by name, because by then we had two kids. And so I didn't even ask him why he had it out on the counter. I saw him reading it and I went, oh, hey, I've been meaning to get that out. Didn't even enter my mind that he would have been reading it for a different
purpose. Why would it? Really, why would it?
Right?
You know, crazy. Well, I mean, I think it's probably the question people ask you a million times. Did you have any idea how deeply troubled he was? I think as someone who wasn't involved, it's like you want a sign, like, well, surely there must have been signs that you missed. I mean,
I would say that that's true, but I miss them because I didn't know to look for them.
Yeah.
And that's part of why I just feel like it's so important to have honest conversations about this topic. When I, so when I arrived home that day and the policeman and priest met me, they told me, that was a day.
I'm sorry, Charlotte. That I have to say, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, well, they said, the policeman said, we will tell the children that their father died, but you have to tell them how.
Mm-hmm.
And we recommend that you tell them the truth because you do not want them to find out from somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And at a time when nothing made sense, that made sense to me. So honesty and transparency have really guided my journey forward. We can't solve the problem of suicide by not talking about it.
Right.
And now it was the hardest thing I have ever done. The children were 6 and 8. Yeah, we fit in one chair. And so I scooped them up and I did tell them the truth. But I
how long do you think it took them to really understand, like in terms of years?
I think we're still really trying to understand in some ways, but your point is a good one. It I would say was different for each child. The 8-year-old refused to say what we called the D words, dad and daddy, for years until all, I would say high school, really. The 6-year-old wanted to talk about dead daddy all the time. So as a single parent, this was obviously sort of a quandary. Single parenting is the absolute hardest thing in the world. And so just like hearts out to all the single parents who might be listening. It's really, really hard. But the children know they can count on me for honest answers to life's hardest questions. And that relationship piece is the most important thing.
Do you think that's the way? Powerful. Yeah. I'm sorry, Liz. Yeah. Do you think that was the way you were before? Were you that honest with them before? Or was that new after Sam's death?
I've always been pretty transparent with my kids. That's a great question because I hadn't ever thought about that. I'm not sure that it was a big shift now that you asked that question, taking what the policeman told me. Maybe why it resonated so much for me is that it was a real affirmation of how I communicated with my kids. I mean, obviously when they're little, I used little words, dead, daddy, sick, sad. Now they're 22 and 24. So we can have much more nuanced conversations. The 22-year-old is a senior in college and a psychology major. So we have amazing discussions about physiology and depression and mental illness. And now he's teaching me.
Yeah.
So the conversation continues. I don't know. There's still days when I drive past the intersection where Sam died and it takes my breath away. Like this is my life. This happened. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing about grief is there's no like end date. There's no expiration date or date certain on which you can say, okay, now I'm done grieving. Done. Fixed. It's over.
Yeah.
Right. Sam was 41 when he died. And I just can only imagine what it will be like for the children when they're 41 and then 42.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Charlotte, in your book, Sushi Tuesdays, it's so beautifully written. The first couple of chapters I felt were so particularly powerful because you literally describe like the seconds, the minutes, the hours, and the days after his death in detail. And it was a really powerful way to just lay out how your life changed in an instant. And I feel like as the reader, I felt every second of that first month after you heard about your husband. Did you feel every second? Do you remember it? I mean, you recall it in the book, but at the time, like, were you understanding what you were living through and what were your emotions? I mean, beyond sadness and shock.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's grief and trauma sort of have this way of telescoping time. And so there were so many details that I will never forget and that were just in sharp relief. But then there are also huge gaping holes in my memory as well. I don't know, for example, So the policeman, the policewoman and the priest were in the driveway, and the policeman and the priest took me into the house first to talk. And the policewoman said, I'll stay with the boys. And I don't know when or how the children and the dog got from the car into the house. Now I look back at that and I think, wow, what a bad mom. I had no idea, right, where they were. And so memory is a slippery thing, and writing a memoir, requires, there were things I went back and looked at, like emails, and sometimes I would even ask friends, but those early moments were so intense that it is almost impossible to forget a lot of those details. And I tried to structure the memoir using time in that way, because grief feels almost like a newborn of its own. You know how when your baby is born, you first count his hours or her hours.
Right.
In hours and then days. And then yes. They're like, oh, the baby is a week. And now she's a month. And then, now she's 27. So, you know what I mean? It's kind of like it's a baby of its own. Trauma is kind of like a baby of its own. So I just tried to structure the book in that way intentionally to give the reader that feeling of how intense those early days are. And then it kind of loosens its grip over time and it becomes easier to breathe.
Right. Well, it definitely gripped me. I think there was a new level of understanding about what, you went through suicide, but even any sudden death of a spouse or a child, drug overdose or anything, it must feel like that intensity. Mm-hmm. And then you were sad, but what else did you feel? I mean, there, you have a lot of, you admit to a lot of anger in the book.
Yes. I was sad. I was angry. I was confused. I was, you know, I was terrified that I was going to be ostracized because of how Sam died. But what I found was actually the opposite, that people wanted to share. They wanted to hear. So Sam died on a Saturday. And on Monday, I took the kids to school. And I was walking them to their little classrooms, people were averting their eyes and kind of giving me space. And, but I thought, well, okay, this is where it begins, right? Everyone mm-hmm. is going to just sort of ostracize us, and I would be alienated from my beautiful community that I loved so much. So I squatted down, I looked them in the eyes and said, you know, last as long as you can. And then as soon as you're ready to come home, let me know, let the teacher know, and I will come get you. And I didn't know whether they'd last 5 minutes or half an hour or the whole day. And they ended up lasting the whole day. But as I turned then to walk back home, I thought, okay, here I go. And I was met with hug after prayer, after words of comfort and tears upon tears. And I was held. They held me. Oh, and over the course of our journey, I was just very transparent as we talked about, and people kept saying, you have to write the book. You have to write the book. So what feared was isolation, and what I found was connection. And that's part of what I'm hoping Sushi Tuesdays will provide, is some connection, the beginnings to a greater conversation, because there's so many suicide stories that right. aren't shared because we are so afraid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Charlotte, this is Liz. I want to ask you specifically about that, because I read that sentence. I was terrified that I would be ostracized after Sam's death. And I want to know more about what that fear was. So it was just that people would be afraid to face you, that they just would not know how to interact with you. That was your fear?
Well, we don't talk about suicide, and there's so much shame and stigma around mental health and suicide right. mm-hmm. that I was afraid of being blamed. Of course, I felt a ton of guilt. I will say, to be honest, it was a lot easier to forgive Sam than it was to forgive myself.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh, yeah. So hard. Oh. Yeah. You know, you also wrote that, you know, if you had a chance to rewrite his obituary, you might choose to use the word suicide now. You didn't originally. And so how has your thought process changed on that? Because as you said at the top of this conversation, if we don't talk about suicide, we're never going to be able to get to the root of what it is at all.
Right. Yeah, I used died suddenly, which suddenly serves as sort of a euphemism in obituaries. I have a lot of hope from the fact that I have seen words like suicide or overdose appear specifically now in obituaries, because we can't solve a problem by ignoring it.
Right.
And when we face into it, when we say the word out loud, and it's a hard word to say, but it's harder to lose someone than to say the word. So I just think that these conversations are very healing. We joke in my house, we don't hide the skeletons in our closets. We display them on the walls and on top of the piano.
Oh my God.
You've had a long journey to get there.
Yes.
You know, Charlotte, you talked about all the comfort you got from your community right after this happened. Tony wrote to us at Satellite Sisters, and she lost a close friend to suicide. And she wanted to ask about what was the best kind of support for the survivors in that situation. What would you say helped you the most?
Oh, Tony, this is a great question. And thank you for asking it. And I'm sorry that you're living this. I would say everybody has a gift. I was amazed. I would just say, yes, I need help. I was amazed at what people would show up with and bring and do. So of course, food, casseroles, hugs, showing up with ice cream or whatever, casseroles, lasagna, all those things. I had a friend who noticed that I was consistently late to school. So she showed up on my doorstep for months at 7:45 exactly with her own two children every morning to get us on time to school. She'd walk in and say, okay, shoes, socks, homework, lunches, here we go. And she was unbelievable. And I didn't need a dozen moms on my doorstep to usher us up to school. I just needed one. And she was there. I had another friend who would sort through my mail. And she would pull out all the bills. She would write, this was in 2007, so we still wrote checks. So she would write everything on the check except sign it. She would put a stamp on the envelope. She would paperclip the check to the stub and the envelope. And all I had to do was sign it and stick it in the envelope. And then she would actually take it to the mail. There, I would just say, if you have a gift, if you have a passion, if you have any ideas at all, that your friend needs your help in that way. I just had, it's an outpouring of love. And so for people who are healing, I would also say, if someone asks you how they can help or if they can help, just say yes and let them figure out how, because I needed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I love that in the book, one of the devices you use is to call all the, particularly the women, the school mom friends, Janes. You don't name them by name, but you were just refer to them as the Janes. And it just made me think we all need Janes in our life at some point, you know, there's going to be a moment when we're all going to have to say yes to the Janes in our lives, and we should just let that help in. And you illustrated that so beautifully in Sushi Tuesdays.
A Sushi Tuesday?
Yeah, I know. That was going to be my next question. Yes. Go for it. Now is the time to explain the title, Charlotte. What is a Sushi Tuesday?
Sushi Tuesdays was basically my day for self-care. I had a yoga class that I really liked on Tuesday mornings. And then my therapist had a recurring slot open up on Tuesdays. So Tuesdays became my day for self-care. I called it my Charlotte Shabbat. And I didn't make appointments with JDs or CPAs or BFDs. It was just Charlotte, her yoga instructor, her therapist. And sometimes I would take myself out to sushi for lunch, party of one. It was too much pressure to make an appointment for coffee even. It was just, and you know, it was just while the kids were in school. So as a practical matter, it was 9 to 3 or so. And so that was my Sushi Tuesdays. And I just really listened to what did Charlotte need for her own self-care? Did I need to crawl back in bed and cry? Because that's real. And if I did, that's what I would do. Do I need to go for a walk? Do I need to just sit and meditate? What does Charlotte need? Do I need to, you know, pound out my rage somewhere? What does Charlotte need today for her own self-care. And that was my Sushi Tuesdays. The kids were little. They didn't care about eating sushi. So it was perfect.
Right.
You just know, for Charlotte.
How just for long Charlotte, did it yeah. take you to get there to Sushi Tuesdays? Just if people are sort of in the, you know, newly have experienced a new loss. I mean, I know grief mm-hmm. has many timelines, but for you, when did Sushi Tuesdays emerge as like, okay, I can do this and I need to do this? Do you recall?
That's a great question because it sort of happened gradually. I would say it was probably about 3 months in when I recognized what was happening.
Oh, that seems fast. I mean, that's it. Well, I guess you have no choice when you have little kids, right?
Totally. It was the mommy channel 24/7. Even I didn't want to hear what I had to say anymore.
Right. Because there's just still being 6 and 8 year olds. Yes. You know, right. Yes.
You're right. 6 and 8 year olds who are grieving in very different yes. ways. And
yes.
Yes, exactly. And so, and children are really good at sort of titrating how much they can take. So, you know, you have an intense conversation and then they're like, okay, mommy, what's for dinner? Let's yeah. read. You know, it's which is really refreshing.
Right. Yeah. That's right. I don't need to talk about this anymore. What's for totally. Dinner? Yeah.
Listen, the dog is still pooping on the lawn. So somebody's got to get that done.
Life moves on.
You know, Charlotte, I was thinking back when I met you at St. Francis. That's the high yeah. school that our sons went to together. And we were on the parent board together.
Yeah.
So it was after Sam's death. I did not know you before that time period. And I remember you, we were both on the PTA essentially. And I remember you came and I was like, "Ooh, look at her. She's really pulled together. She's a lawyer. She's got that great haircut and wow, super sharp looking." And then somebody told me your story. And like, this is what happened to Charlotte's husband. And I, of course, was stunned. What is that like for you, knowing that out in the community, your story enters the room before you do?
Well, wow. That's a great question. I don't think I knew my story did enter the room before I did.
It wasn't gossip. It was just people sort of filling in your backstory.
Totally. Well, you know what happens to what I feel like I experience more often is people not knowing my story. Like you say, you know, I
okay.
the Bob haircut and for me, I feel like it's a reminder to me that everybody has stuff going on.
Yes.
We don't always know.
Yes. You never know what people are going through.
Right.
Yeah. It is surprising and not always in a good way, just what people are carrying. And I think it's just a reminder to be tender in those spaces because we really don't know what people are holding and carrying.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're remarried now. We're sort of skipping ahead. You have a blended family. There is a lot in the book about the challenges of that. So I encourage people to pick up Sushi Tuesday because it's not like, well, look at me now. No. There is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of struggle, a lot of therapy, a lot of back and forth for years. But where is your family now emotionally? And what's it like for them to have you write this memoir?
Oh my gosh. These are all great questions. When Tim and I first got married, so yeah, I accidentally fell in love with the most eligible widower in town.
It's true. He's it a handsome true. Guy. I mean, I'll say it. He's scored, Charlotte. He's a good looking man.
He's good looking, but he's also incredibly kind.
Yes.
He's just plain good. And so I really was not expecting that. And when Tim and I first got married, you know, we had 4 pretty young kids. They were 9, 11, 14, and 17. Mm. And only the youngest one was excited about our getting married. And he,
oh no,
even he changed his mind from time to time. So we were operating at a 12.5% approval rating. I would say, but at this point today in 2023, we're hovering in the high 90s. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. It's certainly a road. When we first got married, our oldest was a senior in high school. And there's a moment that our photographer actually captured. And I was leaning toward him. And I know what I was saying to him was, "I promise I am never going to try to replace your mother, Debbie." But I do hope that at some point we will have our own thing. And Gregory got married in October. Wow. And in advance of the wedding, he asked me to choose a song for the mother-son dance. Which is pretty
okay. Now I'm getting choked up. Now we're all crying. All of us are crying. Charlotte, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome. yeah. So it is a journey that continues, and you know it takes a lot of time, a lot of humor, a lot of humility, a lot of a good bottle of wine doesn't hurt. But we just keep showing up, and just keep loving each other. It's really the only way forward.
Did writing this memoir take you to a new place in your relationship with some of the people in your life, like your sons, your stepsons?
That's a great question. I feel like writing the memoir was learning the craft. I was a little naive about how much it takes to write a book. So,
well, that's the best place to start. Like, how hard could it be? Everybody seems to write one. That's a good starting spot.
Yeah.
That overconfidence. Yeah. You're a lawyer. You write stuff.
I can do stuff. I've read 12 hundreds, thousands of books. So I should be able to write a book, but that didn't turn out to be true. So I hired a book coach. And so I feel like with writing the memoir itself was really learning the craft, learning about story structure, learning about character arc. And so the kids are really cute. They are all very proud of me. They only one has read the book from beginning to end, but anything that had the kids in it, I ran by them first. Most of those had been published in the blog at some level anyway. But they're very cute. They are all very excited and proud. And I think it's a little strange for kids to see mom grow up. I feel like I've finally gone from, you know, stay-at-home mom to someone with a career of her own. And it's really exciting for me, but the kids seem a little mystified by it, but pleased.
Well, I have six books, and one of my sons has never read any. So don't worry, it's not.
I bet they are secretly. I bet they are very proud of you. That's for sure.
Yes,
that's
I bet they are.
Yes,
but with the book, Charlotte, it makes you even more of a resource for other people who have experienced suicide in their life, and so that's a lot to take on. It's one thing to put your story on a page. It's another thing to like put yourself out there. And has any part of that been hard?
It's certainly not an expertise I ever would have anticipated having. It's, you know, it's a club that nobody wants to be in, but as I always say, thank goodness for it, because we are not alone. And that connection changes everything. And we can't always fix everything that happens in life, but we can connect with each other, and that brings great healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Charlotte, you've added to our awareness about this. We had a listener, Jill, who wrote to us and said that for her, it seems like suicide is happening so often these days. And I think you touched on this a little while ago. But she was trying to calibrate, is it because we know so many people through our internet connections, or the numbers of suicides actually going up?
I think it's both. I have, the CDC just came out with a new report on teenagers and mental health, and the statistics for teenage girls are pretty horrifying.
Yeah, it was very grim for teenage girls. Yes.
And so I think, I just feel like this is a story that was demanding to be told, and people are struggling and suffering. And if we can bring some daylight to some of that, I just really believe that we can save lives. So yeah, it's not the cause I would have anticipated, but obviously I feel very passionate about it. I have a lot of hope in that new national lifeline, 988, like 911, but 988 that you can call or text 24/7. Just the fact of having that 988 lifeline out there, I think invites people to ask for help. And it lets people know that you're not the only one who is struggling here. And certain of our communities are even at higher risk. Our LGBTQ plus children, our military, we have work to do. So I'm definitely willing to roll up my sleeves and do the work, because it matters.
When you read about, there have been a couple of high profile suicides, I'm thinking of Twitch or Anthony Bourdain's. Yeah. Does that trigger you, Charlotte? Does that bring up something new, or would should we look for that in the people around us, that they who have experienced suicide, that some reading about Twitch may trigger themselves?
It breaks my heart every time.
Yeah.
And I look forward to a day when these are not conversations that we have to have, when we're able to be really honest with each other about how things are really going and what we're feeling and what we're afraid of. There was a great op-ed in the New York Times. Oh my gosh, I'm losing the name right now. And he was talking about his best friend's struggle with mental health. And his friend had opened up to him about his struggles. And he said that of all the feelings that he is left with, guilt and remorse were not one of them, because his friend had reached out. They knew he was struggling. Everybody was together. He had his team. He had his doctors. He had his medication. And depression still took his life.
Still one.
Yeah, it's important to understand suicide as an illness. It's not a crime. It is an illness. And how we talk about it matters. So we don't say committed suicide anymore. That triggers me more than a lot of things. It's an illness. Commit has that connotation of being a crime. So we say things instead, died by suicide or suicided as a verb, which sounds a little awkward, but we can practice this. I would rather have a glitchy conversation about suicide than no conversation at all. But how we talk about it matters. But in this article in the Times, I wish I could remember who wrote it because it was really beautiful. But he said he didn't feel guilt and regret about how he had been able to show up. And so even though his friend had died, he didn't die without knowing that the people around him were fighting for him as well.
Oh, that's powerful. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
One of my cousins, Sam's cousins, Carol, died from breast cancer the year after Sam did. She was only 33. Oh. And at the funeral, another cousin said, he was really, you know, of course, we were all totally brokenhearted. And he said, Carol was fighting for her life and Sam just threw his away. And it made me so mad because as I told him, you know, Carol had doctors and medication and chemo and people showing up to drive carpool and bringing her lasagna. And Sam was fighting alone. He was fighting just as hard, but he was fighting alone. And what if he had let us into the fight? What if he had let just one person? What if he had let me into the fight with him? Would it have made a difference? I like to think it would. Mm-hmm.
Charlotte, thank you so much for being here today. Just the book is Sushi Tuesdays. It's a beautiful memoir. Your website is an amazing resource for people who are, you know, looking for some comfort and some answers. You also have a newsletter. You're very busy over there at Sushi Tuesdays. Do you still get to have sushi by yourself anymore? Are you still doing that? I'm worried now. I'm worried you're too busy.
We wish that for you.
You know, to be honest,
need that self-care.
Yes, I do. Most Tuesdays I do keep to myself still, because you're right. Self-care is for everybody.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Charlotte Maya, for being with us today. We just appreciate your honesty.
Oh, thank you all. The pleasure has been mine.
Liz, you know we love talking about Framebridge, don't we?
We do. because there are just so many fun things to frame, Leanne, aren't there?
Right. Anything. You can just upload a digital photo from your phone and they can print it and frame it. And that is a gift right there, a gift people would love getting. But Liz, you recently had quite an exciting Framebridge experience. Would you like to share?
I talked about how when we were at the Bruce Springsteen concert, I was with our brother Dick, his wife Susan, his two kids, and one of the roadies threw us the set list at the end of the show, which was amazing to get the actual set list for the actual concert in Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, yeah. Any day now, that's going to be in a place of honor in their home. Sure enough, Leanne, they have already frame-bridged it and sent it to us with a picture. So I'll be in Bend next week, so I'll get to see it. But it's just excellent use of the Framebridge resources, the Bruce Springsteen set list.
Fantastic. And this is gift giving season. So if you have a graduation coming up, a wedding, a shower, Mother's Day, Father's Day, look around. I'm sure you have something fun you can frame, and Framebridge can do it for you. It's easy and it's affordable to frame just about anything. You get fair and transparent upfront pricing based on the size of your item. There's a great selection of frames. And as we've said in the past, fast service, free shipping, great for gifts. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Liz, not many things in life give you a happiness guarantee, but Framebridge does. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So if this
but
sounds like...
you're going to be happy, okay? Yeah. And that's just the Satellite Sisters promise. You're going to be out. You're going to be happy you did it.
See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or see a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything, like a Bruce Springsteen set list. That's framebridge.com. Thanks, Framebridge.
Liz, Elaine, and Julie back. Well, big thanks to Charlotte Maya. You know, just a very moving, emotional conversation. She's amazing talking about this. You know, but imagine how much hard work it's taken her to get to this point where she can talk about it like that. Yeah.
I was going to say, how many conversations have we had about suicide? Have you had personally about suicide? Probably not enough. I mean, that's what Charlotte was saying, to learn more about her experience. I mean, it was real. That was very important.
Right.
I feel going from not
being willing to like say the S word, as she calls it, to really just using, calling it what it is in conversation with people. It's a very powerful change.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have seen a lot of suicides in the mid-20s kids, like almost an epidemic of them. I just heard of, you know, a kid that used to be on my son's soccer team, died in November. And every time it just shatters me a little bit. I can only think of the people left behind and like, but what she said is like how they must've suffered alone.
Yes.
That was very powerful.
Yes. Yes.
Very powerful. This idea that like, if you have cancer, you get this kind of support. If you have a mental health issue, you know, you're on your own sometimes. So it's I thought that was a very powerful conversation. The book is really wonderful. I was an early reader of the book. And she didn't have a publisher.
You blurbed it on the back cover.
I did. Yeah. She was looking for a publisher. So I said, oh, I'll be happy to read it. And I read it. I was like, I didn't know you could write like this. Like, I didn't know there was so much about her I did not know when I read that book. And I certainly didn't know that she could dig so deep and so powerfully. So I think there's a lot in the book for people who have experienced any kind of loss, regardless of whether it's suicide or not. Yeah, I think you'll find some answers there.
Right. Also, in our show notes, we will have links. She mentioned the new suicide hotline that we have a 988 number nationally now. I mean, that just started in July of 22. That just started last year. So anyone across the country, you can call 988 and there will be someone there for you. I know that we had a listener who wrote in that, Katie, right? She said she works for a crisis line in Seattle and that we need to talk about mental health. So Katie wrote in about that, but I'm sure there are other listeners we have that are also engaged in this work.
Our email address is hello@satellitesisters.com. If you want to send us an email about this show or any other topic, hello@satellitesisters.com.
And then there were a couple of other links I thought I would put in. There was a grief book recommended in the Satellite Sisters Facebook group last fall by our longtime listener, Lori Levine, who is herself a counselor. And she said she felt that this book was super useful because it's organized as a series of lists that to help you think through the issues you may be going through with your own grief, whatever it is, whether it's suicide or not. So I'll put a link to that. Also, the American Counseling Organization has all kinds of resources on their website. So we will have a link to that in the show notes.
You know,
go ahead, Jill.
I was just going to, did you want to add more resources, Leanne?
I was just going to say, we'll also have that up at the blog at satellitesisters.com if you're looking for it and you can't find it on your phone. The show notes are always at our blog.
Yeah, because we would like to keep talking about this and we'd love to hear more of your comments. But maybe as we close, I mean, Charlotte wrote something so beautiful that it's a good reminder from Charlotte that if you know someone that has experienced death, you know, just going through this, a suicide or a close family member, she wrote that in lieu of flowers, please be kind to one another. Share your struggles and fears and joys. Be present and patient in each other's journeys. And when love seems to fail, because sometimes love is not enough to ward off cancer or heart failure or mental illness, then love more, pray more, talk more, learn more, and live more.
Hmm. Beautiful. So beautiful. Okay, that's it for today. We're the Satellite Sisters. Don't forget, call your satellite sister.